You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 22nd of June, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com. Of course, I am joined today by the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how you doing?
That's a mouthful for you, isn't it? Three documentaries.
Yeah, it's a trial
I'm doing
remember.
All right. Just had a bit of a hiccup, but we are on air, I believe.
We are, yeah, yeah. Finally, we managed to get connected. I do apologise for the slight delay there, a few technical issues, but we have got an exciting podcast for you tonight. We both discovered something that we weren't aware of before in the process of researching for tonight's program. And really, I thought, well, let's have a look at ethnic cleansing, because we're told we can't move the Third World hordes out from our countries, because that would be ethnic cleansing. That would be absolutely terrible. Yet after the war, there was massive ethnic cleansing went on. Masses of white Germans were removed from one country into another. So I thought, well, let's just have a look at this. And during the process of actually looking at this, we discovered something that we never really thought could be possible. And we'll get to that later on in the program. But what we're going to be mainly talking about is, as I say, these Germans that were removed from one part of Europe into another. And in particular, I mean, your father was involved in these movements as well. I mean, he was fleeing from these movements, wasn't he, Dennis?
Yeah, he was down at the other end of the Balkans.
Because they were a part of it as well. There were people who were removed from the Balkans and the Baltics. And it was just absolutely horrific at the end of the war, what went on there.
Oh, terrible.
Well, let's have a look at what happened here. During the later stages of World War II and the post-war period, German citizens and people of German ancestry fled or were expelled from various Eastern and Central European countries and sent to the remaining territory of Germany and Austria. After 1950, some emigrated to the United States, Australia, and other countries from there. The areas affected included the former eastern territories of Germany, which were annexed by Poland and the Soviet Union after the war, as well as Germans who were living within the pre-war borders of Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, Yugoslavia, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. The post-war expulsion of the Germans formed a major part of the geopolitical and ethnic reconfiguration of Eastern Europe in the aftermath of World War II that attempted to create ethnically homogeneous nations within redefined borders. Between 1944 and 1948, about 31 million people, including ethnic Germans as well as German citizens, were permanently or temporarily moved from Central and Eastern Europe. That is about half the population of Britain today, Dennis, that were removed during this period.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, they weren't particularly organised, I don't think. I think it was just like, look after yourself, off you go.
Yeah, they certainly weren't looked after. In fact, aid companies and charities were banned from helping these people out. Banned from helping them out. And we complain today about repatriating people that shouldn't be in our countries that are of a different race from us. And the government will say, well, we can't do that. Can't possibly do that. The UN says, oh, it's against all our treaties. Yet when it's 31 million white people that are being moved, well, that's absolutely fine. Just wait until we get to the reason that they actually gave for moving these white people, which we'll get to in a minute. What happened? By 1950, a total of approximately 12 million Germans had fled or been expelled from East Central Europe into Allied occupied Germany and Austria. The West German government put the total at 14 million, including ethnic German migrants to Germany after 1950 and the children born to expelled parents. The largest numbers came from pre-existing German territories ceded to Poland and the Soviet Union, about 7 million, and from Czechoslovakia, about 3 million. During the Cold War, the West German government also counted as expellees 1 million foreign colonists settled in territories conquered by National Socialist Germany during World War II. The death toll attributable to the flight and expulsions is disputed, with estimates ranging from 500,000 up to a West German demographic estimate from the 1950s of over 2 million. More recent estimates by some historians put the total at 500,000 to 600,000 attested deaths. They maintain that the West German government figures lack adequate support and that during the Cold War the higher figures were used for political propaganda. The German Historical Museum puts the figure at 600,000, maintaining that the figure of 2 million deaths in the previous government studies cannot be supported. The current official position of the German government is that the death toll resulting from the flight and expulsions ranged from 2 to 2.5 million civilians. And just before we continue with that, it's interesting that they're saying that the German government was trying to make out that it was more people that were killed, but the real figures are coming out now, and they're reducing it to just 500,000, which just seems very strange to me, because the German government was in the hands of the Allies, and they certainly wouldn't be exaggerating it at the time. They would have been minimizing it. What have you heard about how many were actually killed, Dennis? What you know, 500,000 or 2 million or more? What had you heard about
more? I mean, I think James Bass gave a figure. He's quite easily in double figures, in millions.
Well, that would seem a lot more like it to me. When you think, I think he was probably talking about the amount of people that actually moved there. 12 million, it says there, 30 million. So that would be a third of them that he was saying was killed if it was double figures. Could have been.
Which wouldn't be, you know, yeah, exactly. There's no food. Where would they go? I mean, all the cities in Germany were flattened.
And they were running from rape and murder from the Red Army. And the actual...
Well, not only that, there were retribution from all over, weren't there? I mean, in all parts... You know, if you were part of the National Socialist Army, then you had a problem.
You were the designated enemy, and what was the unconditional surrender? Everybody could do whatever they liked to you.
Exactly.
No chance of getting any justice. Well, continuing with this, the removals occurred in three overlapping phases, the first of which was the organised evacuation of ethnic Germans by the NSDAP government in the face of the advancing Red Army from mid-1944 to early 1945. The second phase was the disorganised fleeing of ethnic Germans immediately following the Wehrmacht's defeat. The third phase was a more organised expulsion following the Allied leaders' Potsdam Agreement, which redefined the Central European borders and approved expulsions of ethnic Germans from Poland, Czechoslovakia and Hungary. Many German civilians were sent to internment and labour camps where they were used as forced labour as part of German reparations to countries in Eastern Europe. The major expulsions were complete in 1950. Estimates for the total number of people of German ancestry still living in Central and Eastern Europe in 1950 range from 700 to 2.7 million. And I'll just say that we're actually getting this from Wikipedia. This isn't from a nationalist site at all. So it's going to be trying to attack Germany and minimize what's actually going on. But it still sounds pretty horrific just with what they're saying here. And what they're saying is that the Germans were then used as forced labor to repair the damage of what had happened in Europe by the bombings by the Allies, and then the Germans were used to rebuild it. Can you just imagine what it would be like today if we said, well, we're going to use the Muslims as forced labour. We're going to use them as slaves and the Third World.
Yeah.
To pay us back for all the terrorist acts, to pay us back for 1,000 people killed just by the Muslim refugees in the last, I forget what it was, since 2014. 1,000 people killed and maimed by refugees in the name of Islam. You know, they'd be screaming about being called slaves, wouldn't they?
I'm sure they would.
But it's okay if it's white people. Now, here we get the reason given for the expulsions. The reason given for the expulsions, a desire to create ethnically homogenous nation states, an ethnostate. That was the reason given. This is presented by several authors as a key issue that motivated the expulsions. In general, the Western Allies hoped to secure a more lasting peace by eliminating the German minorities, which they thought could be done in a humane manner. The idea to expel the ethnic Germans was supported by Winston Churchill and Anthony Eden. So they thought this was humane, doing this. So it's humane when it's Germans, but we're not allowed to do it if it's non-whites.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised that Churchill's name crops up.
Yeah, and Anthony Eden, they all went along with it. They all went along with it. Well, the interesting thing here is that they're saying it's okay to do this if you're going to create an ethnostate. And the reason for the ethnostate, they say the creation of ethnically homogenous nation states in Central and Eastern Europe was presented as the key reason for the official decision of the Potsdam and previous Allied conferences, as well as the resulting expulsions. The principle of every nation inhabiting its own nation state gave rise to a series of expulsions and resettlements of Germans, Poles, Ukrainians, and others who, after the war, found themselves outside their supposed home states. The 1923 population exchange between Greece and Turkey lent legitimacy to this concept. Churchill cited the operation as a success in his speech discussing the German expulsions. So we've clearly got a precedent for this, for moving populations around. And the goal of moving the populations around was to create an ethnostate. So why was it okay then, but it's not okay now? Why is it okay to do it to Germans, but not to non-whites? Why do you think that is, Dennis?
Why do I think that is? Well, it would do it in their interest to get rid of as many Germans as possible. I don't know. They were slicing up Europe from World War One, and so now they've been even more ruthless. They're kind of teaching the Germans a lesson, and wow, what a lesson!
Well, the reason they actually gave for wanting these ethnostates is because they wanted to prevent violence, specifically multicultural violence. The participants at the Potsdam Conference asserted that expulsions were the only way to prevent ethnic violence. As Winston Churchill expounded in the House of Commons in 1944, expulsion is the method which, insofar as we have been able to see, will be the most satisfactory and lasting. There will be no mixture of populations to cause endless trouble. A clean sweep will be made. I am not alarmed by the prospect of disentanglement of populations, not even of these large transferences, which are more possible in modern conditions than they have ever been before. Which is, that's just common sense. So how come they knew this back then? They knew that if you mix populations up, you were going to get endless trouble and constant ethnic violence. And the only way to prevent the ethnic violence and the civil war is to separate these different peoples. And they're not talking different races here. They're talking Germans and Poles, Germans and Russians. And they knew that if they were all mixed up together in one territory, there was going to be civil war. So it's common sense.
They're well aware of the consequences. But it just sounds, Churchill's talking, he always does do to me, but he's talking away. But then, he goes on and praises the EU the same year. Or 46, sorry.
Well, the thing is, somewhere along the line, they've changed, and now it's all diversity is a strength. But back here in 1944, they were quite open about it, that mixed ethnic groups in one territory is just going to lead to civil war. And the only way to prevent it is to remove them. So somewhere along the line in the last, well, 60 years, this has all changed, and diversity is a strength.
Yeah, well, like I said, he gave a speech in 1946 praising the EU were proposing. So, and that certainly wasn't what he's on about here. So it wasn't that long after things were moving in, to where they are today. No borders and mixed populations.
Well, they also showed, I mean, they cited the exchange between Greece and Turkey, that, you know, this worked absolutely fine. So how come when we have people that come over here, supposedly fleeing war from Iraq and Afghanistan and what have you, and then when their countries are no longer at war, why can't we send them back? Why, you know, we've got the precedent for this here.
I think Italy are, aren't they?
Yeah, Italy are, thankfully, yeah. We've been talking about that earlier in the week, and that's great to see. They're working with Hungary as well, Dennis. Italy, Hungary.
I know, yeah, they're getting a bit of an alliance, Austria. Which is good because they're stronger, you know, when there's a few countries together.
Austria.
I saw Merkel storming out parliament this week as well when she was under attack from the new political right out there. She couldn't take it and just walked out.
She's under attack from her own side as well. There's a minister called Seehofer who's been working with Sebastian Kurz from Austria, who is very anti-immigration. They want to put all the borders up. And Austria is going to be the president of the European Union Council next month.
Really?
Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
Well, this is why, this is why Sebastian Kurz is going to Hungary. He's in Hungary at the moment, meeting up with Orban, the guys from Italy, all the Visegrad countries. And I think what he's doing is putting together a coalition so that when he takes the presidency, they can make big changes. And he's already got, you know, his support in place.
Yeah, I mean, it's great news. I mean,
wonderful.
I'm not sure what, the other side will do to prevent what's going on, because that's the last thing they want. Because, I think Merkel said something about they're going to admit 200,000 migrants every year. So that certainly doesn't go along with Merkel's plans.
Well, they want to shift them all around, don't they? They're saying, you've all got to have a quota of migrants, but Orban has just brought...
Yeah, they'll be voted for that.
No, well, Orban's just brought a law in saying that it's illegal to, what's the exact wording, transplant an alien population into Hungary.
So it's great news, this, because for a long time I thought nothing's happening here. We're just getting walked all over, we're not even being asked if we want to or not, and around many, dragging their feet toward Brexit and all this kind of carry on. But to see this kind of movement now actually coming to fruition, it's really good, really good.
That means we've got somebody we can rally behind, somebody, we can support. And, we might see a change in the narrative as well. I mean, if you've got the president of the EU being anti-immigration, and he's got a huge block of countries behind him, and you've also got Donald Trump speaking up against it as well. I mean, it might push some of these other EU countries to go against it.
Hopefully, it'll collapse, but I think it'll take a lot more than that. But the whole idea, if enough nations gather together, just to send it down the river,
Well, the other option is, the problem with the European Union is the way that it's set up and the people behind it, because Adolf Hitler had a plan for a European Union. Oswald Mosley had a plan for it.
Yeah, sorry.
It was a union of, sovereign nations. It wasn't like the way it is now with no borders. I mean, every country was supposed to have its borders. Everyone was supposed to be democratically elected, and there wasn't supposed to be anybody that was, sort of running it all that wasn't elected, that was just put in place by the banks. That was the plan. That was the fascist plan. And what we might get if with Sebastian Kurz in there in the presidency and with support, we might see something closer to that. We might see that there's a, they enforce a border around Europe, and they give the right to make their own laws to the countries within the European Union, like Hungary is doing right now.
Well, that's a problem, isn't it? I mean, when Brussels are making all decisions, so it doesn't really matter. I mean, your vote wasn't, you know, worth a lot to start with, but I mean, when another group of people unelected are making decisions for other sovereign countries, then it's just ridiculous. I mean, nobody's asked for that.
Well, it's based on the Soviet model. That's what the European Union is based upon, isn't it? And of course, Stalin was... Go on.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I said that in Communism by the Back Door, that it was based on Soviet Union.
Completely. Well, Stalin was
through last at the time, but now they're starting to realise.
Well, there's, I'm just trying to think, wasn't it the, I can't think of the name, but there was some communist thing that was set up in Moscow that the EU goes to for just about everything. UNESCO, that's it, UNESCO. That was set up by, in Moscow by the communists, and that controls a lot of what the EU policy is. The EU policy on race and all that sort of thing, that comes directly from UNESCO.
Yeah. Education, school children.
Yeah, that's the one. So, the EU is just communism, well, sneaking it in. It's exactly like the title of your documentary, Dennis, isn't it? Communism.
It's exactly the title.
That is the EU. Well, of course, Stalin, he was well up for all these movements because he had earlier directed several population transfers in the Soviet Union. And he strongly supported these expulsions, which worked to the Soviet Union's advantage in several ways. The satellite states would now feel the need to be protected by the Soviets from German anger over the expulsions. Although I don't see how these defeated Germans were actually going to be able to fight back. They had nothing. They were just, defenseless when they were being attacked. But it says here, these countries felt they needed to be protected by the Soviets from German anger. The assets left by the Germans in Poland and Czechoslovakia were successfully used to reward cooperation with the new governments, and support for the communists was especially strong in areas that had seen significant expulsions. Settlers in these territories welcomed the opportunities presented by their fertile soils and vacated homes and enterprises, increasing their loyalty. Well, this is very similar to what we're seeing today, isn't it, with the third world that comes in here. And they come in here because they want what we have. They want the fertile soils that we have nurtured, our countries that we have nurtured, so that they are fertile and they produce, and they want to take it, and they drive us out. So that it's our homes and enterprises that are being taken over by them. And it was the same with at this time with the communists. They moved all the Germans out, took all their property, took all their technological advances, all their patents, and used them. And it's very similar today with what the third world is doing. Taking everything from us.
Well, it's the people in charge then are the same people still in charge now who are allowing them to come in. And according to the Barcelona Agreement, this was agreed back in the 90s, that they could welcome these Muslims into Europe and give them every assistance, which is exactly what we're seeing, which is why, all these benefits are given, and they're bent over backwards to make them even laws allowed not to offend these Muslims in Christian countries.
Well, it's all about white genocide, basically, isn't it? I mean, they will say, well, we want to create ethno-states, and in order to create these ethno-states, we need to remove all these Germans from these countries. And by the way, 3 million of them will die along the way, but we need to create these ethno-states because otherwise we'll have tension because they'll be multicultural and they'll fight. And once they've killed 3 million Germans that way, then they'll say, oh, diversity is a strength. We need to have multicultural countries. We will import the third world. And as they import the third world, lots of our people get murdered by them, and probably just as many of them get miscegenated by them. So the next generation, they might as well be dead white people because they're not white anymore. They're gone. The next generation is brown. So it's the same thing. So whatever way they can wipe out white people, they will. And whatever excuse they can use, they will. That's what it looks like to me. Because they've gone the total opposite, well, haven't they? In what they're saying.
Well, the thing is, what I'm saying amused me. It didn't really amuse me at all, really, but I raised an eyebrow at the fact that as soon as World War II was over, they sent the black colonial soldiers again into Stuttgart, and they raped and pillaged everywhere.
Into Stuttgart? Tell us more about this.
Yeah, it was about, I think, well over 1,000 rapes. The French say, I mean, you know the problems then when they were sent into the Rhineland, the French sent the colonial soldiers straight into Stuttgart.
That's similar to the Red Army going in, isn't it? A lot of the Red Army were Asiatic.
Yeah.
They weren't actually white people.
Well, it's all about race mixing. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to destroy the pure German race. They mixed it with the Asians from Russia. They got the black colonial soldiers in from wherever in Africa. And that's what it boils down to. They want to get rid of that race. And obviously, Anglo-Saxons following that suit.
Well, that's all it can be, really, isn't it? I mean, if they are saying we want to create ethnostates and we don't want diversity and it kills lots of white people, and then 50 years later they're saying diversity is a strength, we can't have ethnostates and we've got to bring in lots of brown people. You know, the end result of both isn't actually what they are saying, but the end result is dead white people.
That's
right. The ulterior motive.
Yeah, but it's a prominent motive.
It's getting more and more prominent now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, let's have a look at some of what happened. Late in the war, as the Red Army advanced westwards, many Germans were apprehensive about the impending Soviet occupation. I bet they were apprehensive.
They were more than apprehensive.
Yeah.
They were terrified.
They knew what Bolshevism was doing. They knew that all these people had starved in Ukraine. Is it three times, three famines or something they had there, engineered famines? They knew what was coming.
Nailing women to kitchen tables and barn doors.
Yeah, well, that's one of these, I think, that's going to come up now. Most were aware of the Soviet atrocities against German civilians. Soviet soldiers committed numerous rapes and other crimes. News of these atrocities hastened the flight of ethnic Germans from much of Eastern Europe. Late in the war, as the Red Army advanced westwards, many Germans were apprehensive about the impending Soviet occupation. Most were aware of the Soviet reprisals against German civilians. Soviet soldiers committed numerous rapes and other crimes. News of atrocities such as the Nemersdorf massacre were widely known and talked about. And I think it was that Nemersdorf massacre where they were like crucifying people to barn doors.
Yeah.
There was one particular part of it. And don't forget, in places like Lithuania and Latvia, they'd already been under communist occupation. The Germans had come in and liberated them, and the Jews
back under again.
Communists, yeah, they fled. And then once they knew that they were coming back, I mean, the way that they were treated is horrific, because they'd already got rid of the communists once. So when they came back, it was all, you know, communist vengeance taken out.
Well, don't forget that the German army had to save some communists from the crowd anyway. I mean, they were attacking them before the Germans got there, knowing that the Germans were on a roll. So you can imagine what the retribution was from the communists.
Well, they said that a lot about a lot of the countries they liberated. It wasn't actually the Germans that were going after the Jews. It was the people that had been liberated going after the communists.
Well, so, yeah, I'm sure, because they felt it more than the Germans did.
Yeah. For what had been done to them. And we've actually got a witness statement here. This is from a Soviet witness called Rabichev. And this is Nemersdorf in the eyes of the perpetrators. He says, this Soviet guy in the Red Army, he says, our troops in East Prussia caught up with the civilians evacuating from Goldap, Insterburg and other cities, which were left by the withdrawing German army. They drew carriages and cars. On foot, women, children, large patriarchal families slowly moved to the west on all roads and highways of the country. Our tanks, infantry, artillery, and communications troops prodded them in order to clear the road. They pushed them into the ditches on each side of the highway with their carts, furniture, bags, suitcases and horses. They ran down the elderly and children, and forgetting to be thankful to the German troops retreating without a fight, thousands attacked the women and girls. Women, mothers and their daughters were lying to the left and to the right of the highway, and in front of each stood a giggling line of men with their pants down. Those bleeding and losing consciousness were dragged away. The children throwing themselves to help them were shot. You could hear growling, laughing, screaming and moaning, and their commanders, majors and colonels stood on the road, some laughing, some directing, or rather regulating the traffic. This was in order to make sure that all of their soldiers, without exception, participated. No, it was not to ensure collective responsibility, and not at all a revenge on the accursed invaders. It was just one hell of a deadly group sex. And that is tame. You know, I really didn't want to put too extreme a report in here, but I mean, that is a tame report of what actually went on. And I think what's interesting about that is where he says, you know, they're forgetting to be thankful to the German troops who retreated without a fight. I mean, they were honourable, the German troops were. They said, look, you know, we've lost the war. We might as well, you know, stop killing one another. We'll save on the death toll. And yet instead of honouring that, the Red Army did that to all the refugees, all the civilians, the innocent people, the women and children.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of, obviously, this has been kept under wraps, but it's all slowly coming out now with the internet, just how bad it was. I mean, if they ever made a film, it'd be unbelievable.
They think 1 million women were raped just in Germany alone. 1 million women.
I thought it was more than that, believe it or not.
Well, that's the number of refugees that invaded Germany in 1 year. That amount, that's yeah, a lot of people.
I heard it more, 2 million.
It could well, may well have been two million. I mean, this, as I say, this is just in Germany, because you've also got Germans in other countries.
Yeah, well, you've got the other countries what part with Germany, Hungary.
And you've also got... I mean, it was absolutely depraved what they did. In one instance, they went into a hospital where women were giving birth, a maternity hospital, and they raped the women while they were giving birth and while after they had given birth and before they had given birth. All of them, the whole hospital, and they raped nuns. They, as you say, they were nailing people onto barn doors. I mean, it's absolutely just boggles the mind what went on. And the, you know, the Germans have never been able to, you know, really come to terms with any of that. They've never been able to speak about it. It was illegal to speak out against any of the Allies' activities. So you couldn't say, you know, it was wrong, the firebombing of Dresden. You couldn't say, you know, well, that was wrong that, you know, my mother got raped. If you were to say that, you would get sent to prison. Mm. It was against the law to criticise any of this that went on.
I mentioned in Grace's story that they weren't even allowed to say Adolf Hitler.
If you think, you know, they were never able to actually talk about this. So it's like lodged there in the lodged there, isn't it? In the collective unconscious.
They're doing exactly the same thing today, stopping people by various means of speaking out. Anti-Semitism is one of them.
Yeah, the anti-free speech laws. So trying to prevent us from being able to discuss anything. Now, that denazification process that they went through, I mean, every country in Europe is going through that now. Being taught a false history and told lies about what went on and banning us from being able to talk about what's really going on and speak the truth.
That's right.
Like what went on in Germany was a prototype for the rest of Europe.
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, I suppose you could say if they managed to ever do wipe us out, they will only go for the next ones, probably the Muslims, because that's what they do.
well, we should at least be able to remove the Muslims from our countries and the non-whites. If people say, well, you can't do that, that's inhumane. Well, you can point out, well, you know, nobody was saying it was inhumane when it was 30 million Germans that were removed from these countries, and they weren't even given aid, and all the horrific things that went on, and all that was perfect. That was perfectly fine. That was perfectly acceptable, and nobody complained about it. And yet today, if we talk about sending back a rapist from Sweden, they'll say, "Oh no, we can't possibly send him back because he won't be safe in the country that he's going back to."
Yeah, that's what it amounts to.
So we're treating these others far better than we ever would have treated our own people. And that's because we've got traitors in power.
It's an agenda, isn't it? I mean, it isn't a level playing field. This is the thing. A lot of people think it's a level playing field, but it never will be because, like I said, same people in charge then are in charge today. And, you know, just the fact in Germany you can get jail for, you know, denying the Holocaust. It's the same, you know, it's the same people.
Now, if you think they're trying to reduce it, aren't they? I mean, the Germans said that it was 2 million people that got killed. And what the academics are now saying is, oh, no, it was just 500,000. It was just 500,000.
Yeah, well, they did the same with Dresden, didn't they? I think they said 25,000 Dresden.
Yeah, they minimised the figures. But I'm just thinking, figures, it's like what they said at Nuremberg. Anybody that challenges what was said at Nuremberg about 6 million Jews being gassed to death, you know, that's hollow denial.
Yeah. And,
you know, they may eventually say, well, anyone that challenges this 500,000 figure, that was all that died, you know, that's hollow denial. I mean, or, you know, that's revisionism. Because at the time, if you'd said at the time that, you know, there are all these people that are dying from being ethnically cleansed from Poland and from Hungary, you would have been sent to prison for it. Because you couldn't complain.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tried and tested method that they did in the Soviet Union as well, where anti-Semitism carried a death sentence under Lenin and Stalin. So, you know, what's tried and tested, they're bringing back again.
Yeah, they think if they can just stop people talking about something, then, you know, that's all you have to do is just stop people talking about it, and then, you know, then they'll be safe and there won't be an uprising.
Well, it's not just that. They have a media blackout as well, because there's a lot of things on the media don't get on the media, if you know what I mean, mainstream, which we see on the internet. You know, it doesn't even get anywhere near. I mean, what more than anything, when David Rockefeller died, no mention in mainstream about him dying. That's, you know, the very least. So when you see people climbing up the gates of Downing Street complaining Tommy Robinson's in prison, that never gets on the mainstream, then there's a media blackout.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that one up. And 20,000 people turn up to demonstrate against him being jailed, and there's nothing about that. It says there was a couple of news reports, and all they said was violent far-right demonstration. Five people arrested. Five people arrested. Yeah. You know, Diane Abbott has written an open letter saying that there's a rise of the far-right, and all these Tommy Robinson supporters were Heil Hitlering and doing Hitler salutes, and they must all come together to counter demonstrate and shut down the far right. And she's had all these people sign this letter, and it's been put in the Independent and in the Guardian, because I think there's another demonstration coming up.
That got mainstream news.
I don't know how accurate that was, that all the people on that demonstration were neo-Nazis. I'd like to think they were.
About 50 people, and one was just said, was it a Nazi salute? I couldn't really tell if it were or weren't. I mean, he had his arm in the air, but I don't think he were praising the Nazis. I think he were more, if anything, he'd just been doing it to the police to show that he thought they were Nazis, more likely.
Well, I think young lads would probably do that anyway, just to be edgy. I mean, you know, it's not really a shock for someone to stick two fingers up or one finger up anymore. I mean, they probably wouldn't even blank that out if it was on the television. The only real taboo thing that's left is, is being a traditionalist and being a nationalist. That's the only taboo that's left is being a decent, good person. So giving a straight arm salute. Yeah, when you're young, you want to rebel, don't you? So that's the only honest way there is left to rebel, is to be the good guy. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if there were people Hitler saluting that don't really know any more about it other than they just want to shock people, and that's the way to do it. Well, let's have a look at these refugees. The first exodus of German civilians from the Eastern Territories was composed of both spontaneous flight and organized evacuation, starting in mid-1944 and continuing until early 1945. Conditions turned chaotic during the winter when kilometers-long queues of refugees pushed their carts through the snow, trying to stay ahead of the advancing Red Army. Now, you've got a piece in your documentary that deals with this, haven't you, Dennis? I believe it's Ernst Sandel's wife talking about it.
That's right. He said that the German army never let them down. He protected them, found them shelter at night. They were moving part, and certainly that was kind of the tide had turned then.
Imagine it in the snow as well, and they've just got their carts and they're just pushing all their belongings. They don't know how long it's going to take them to get there. You know, there's people dying at the side of the road, and then, you know, the Red Army comes up and rapes them, kills them, and they're just praying that the Germans are going to rescue them. And the way it's portrayed today, the Germans are the bad guys.
Yeah. Well, she mentions how Germany, under the immense pressure that they were under at the time, you know, let them in because there was nowhere else to go. But Germany, let them in. You know what I mean? So
they stopped the trains to the gulags as well, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Well, that was at the start when they first got into it because she was about to be deported. Interesting one, that one. Yeah, they stopped the trains. There's a lot in that documentary people didn't really know that, you know, for instance, when they liberated in inverted commas, a camp, there were no prisoners of war, where Stalin was concerned. They all got sent to gulags. And while they were in that prison, the families had already been sent to gulags. Stalin just didn't want anybody tainted with this Western, society type of thing. That played a big part in that documentary, just to see. And of course, Churchill and Roosevelt knew about it. Never said anything because they were more than happy for him to do what they
knew. Well, Churchill and the rest of them, they knew that it was the Soviets that were responsible for the Kachin massacre, and yet they still allowed Germany to be blamed for that at the Nuremberg trials as well.
Yeah. And I found some footage, found a French documentary and managed to get it down, and that's got a lot of stuff on the Soviet Union. It shows the Katyn massacre, obviously, the graves, whatever. But then it goes on to show a hell of a lot more graves as well. It wasn't just Katyn.
Masses and masses of dead that were killed by Bolshevism.
Yeah.
Refugee treks, which came within reach of the advancing Soviets, suffered casualties when targeted by low-flying aircraft, and some people were crushed by tanks. Don't forget, this is Wikipedia, so probably a lot more than just some people were crushed by tanks.
Yeah, I heard that, by the way. After the first wave of bombs, then there were planes with machine guns, aiming at anything, you know, bicycles, anything.
And you think these are refugees, refugees that come into contact with an army. The army is supposed to help them. I mean, just today, there's been on the news about the police finding an illegal immigrant, and they took a picture of themselves feeding him fish and chips. Because if you meet somebody that's starving, you're supposed to help them, even if they're a criminal or what have you. You're supposed to feed them.
Yeah, let them die, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and when these German refugees would come across the Soviets, well, they'd just crush them with the tanks and fire at them. target practice. The German Federal Archive has estimated that 100 to 120,000 civilians, 1% of the total population, were killed during the flight and evacuations. I would guess that was more like 10%, if you think of the cold and the starvation. Polish historians, go on.
They've no reason to give accurate figures because who's going to dispute them and see the light?
Well, if you dispute them, you'll just get accused of being a Nazi, won't you? A Nazi sympathiser.
Media's not going to back you up, is it?
Well, even the Germans would accuse you of being a Nazi sympathiser.
Yeah, I know.
And that demonstration against Dresden, they're holding up signs saying, go on, Bomber Harris, do it again. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's the mind control. How that worked with the 5 years shut down of Germany.
Totally brainwashed. Polish historians Witold Sienkiewicz and Grzegorz Hurkiuk maintain that civilian deaths in the flight and evacuation were between 600,000 and 1.2 million. The main causes of death were cold, stress, and bombing. So they were just deliberately bombing the refugees. The mobilized KDF liner Wilhelm Gustav was sunk in January 1945 by a Soviet Navy submarine, killing about 9,000 civilians and military personnel escaping East Prussia in the largest loss of life in a single ship's sinking in history. Many refugees tried to return home when the fighting ended. Before 1st of June 1945, 400,000 people crossed back over the Oder and Nies rivers eastwards before Soviet and Polish communist authorities closed the river crossings. Another 800,000 entered Silesia through Czechoslovakia. In accordance with the Potsdam Agreement at the end of 1945, 4.5 million Germans who had fled or been expelled were under the control of the Allied governments. From 1946 to 1950, around 4.5 million people were brought to Germany in organized mass transports from Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary. And an additional 2.6 million released prisoners of war were listed as expellees. So that's about 12 million there that have been moved about, just transported about, have lost everything, lost their homes.
Yeah. Literally, lost everything.
And
probably another major blackout, so nobody knows what's going on.
Well, you would think that if the Red Army was liberating these countries, why were so many of them fleeing? Why was everybody fleeing?
Yeah, well, I saw a report not long back. They actually raped in Auschwitz when they liberated Auschwitz.
What did they do in Auschwitz? Who did they rape in Auschwitz?
Raped. Yeah, they even raped the Jewish women in Auschwitz.
That doesn't surprise me. It was just raping everything. But, I mean, this shows you, these people are fleeing. You know, they're not cheering. They're not, well, hey, our country's been liberated. They're just running. Everyone's running.
Yeah, well, it's communism, isn't it? That's the problem. And people don't realise we're in the middle of it now.
Well, let's have a look at the total deaths and total displaced. Estimates of total deaths of German civilians in the flight and expulsions, including forced labour of Germans in the Soviet Union, range from 500,000 to a maximum of 3 million people. English language sources have put the death toll at 2 to 3 million, based on the West German government figures from the 1960s. These are the official figures, so it's probably a lot higher than that. With at least 12 million Germans directly involved, possibly 14 million or more, it was the largest movement or transfer of any single ethnic population in European history and the largest among the post-war expulsions in Central and Eastern Europe, which displaced 20 to 31 million people in total. So after the war, there was 20 to 30 million people in all that were moved around by this in their attempt to set up these ethno-states, which they now want to, you know, make into multicultural states. 30 million people were moved to set up ethno-states that have now been, completely destroyed with diversity. When you look at 12 million...
I'll tell you one thing, Sven. I bet they didn't have benefits like Muslims do.
No, they didn't have any welfare system, did they? The Germans were the first to come up with a welfare system from the state. But if it was 12 million Germans being directly moved around and they claimed 3 million died, that's 25%. A quarter of all the Germans died from this moving.
That was planned anyway, I think. Morgenthau plan was to eliminate a number of Germans after the war. They even had I forgot the name of the boot now, but they had a boot printed, which Goebbels used to refer to quite often about, killing Germans.
Germany must perish.
That's the one.
That's the one, isn't
That's
it?
The one. That's
the exact number of Germans expelled after the war is still unknown because most recent research provides a combined estimate, which includes those who were evacuated by the German authorities, fled or were killed during the war. So they just include everyone that left, whether they ran or whether they were kicked out or whatever. It is estimated that between 12 and 14 million German citizens and foreign ethnic Germans and their descendants were displaced from their homes. The exact number of casualties is still unknown and is difficult to establish due to the chaotic nature of the last months of the war. Census figures place the total number of ethnic Germans still living in Eastern Europe in 1950, after the major expulsions were complete, at approximately 2.6 million, which is about 12% of the pre-war total. So 90% of them were moved. It's not going to be that much of a problem to remove the non-whites and all the intruders that shouldn't be here in our countries at the moment. If they could remove, 90% of the Germans from Europe and 30 million people in total, surely it can be done to remove the non-whites from our countries. It's not, in the realm of fantasy, is it?
Quite easily.
Yeah.
Modern day, it's not like you're back in the 40s, is it? Where, you have the transport and the speed as well. But I'd just like to say, I had a bit of a roast on YouTube with, he seemed to be of an intellectual type, and he was going on about James Basque and his figures not being true, and got to a point where I said to him, look, you've got to look at a situation where people in court, if they've been found to be lying, the court can never trust them again, or they just can't be trusted. So when you find out that the Russians were lying, no matter what figures you're coming up with, this is, an untrustworthy source. And he wouldn't have it, and so eventually I had to block him. But he just wouldn't admit that the Allies did atrocities and therefore couldn't be trusted.
Well, that's the way it is with anything. If you're reading anything and you find that there's something in it that's false, something in it that isn't accurate, then that calls into question everything else that's in that. Because you've identified that one bit that's false or inaccurate because you know that bit well yourself, but you may not know the rest of it that well. And because you found one bit that's inaccurate, it means you've got to disallow the rest of it. And, this is why I say when people point at anti-Christian stuff that, takes it as read that the today's modern Jews are the people of the Old Testament, you've got to throw the whole thing out because, that's an essential premise that they have got wrong. So the rest of it it cannot be trusted. It's got to be thrown out.
Well, likewise, Obama once blatantly lied about his grandfather in the American Army liberated Auschwitz, and it was going on. I mean, everybody knows that it was the Russians that liberated, so to speak, Auschwitz. The Americans were nowhere near, and yet this is a president lying through his back teeth. Can he ever be trusted? Because he must be saying it for a reason. Obviously, he's got an agenda there.
I mean, this is just the way the academics work. If there's a falsehood in there, then it has to be thrown out. And of course, because Obama is a leftist, they would overlook that, wouldn't they? I mean, I'm sure that's not the first time he lied.
I think he said his grandfather is in the attic for months after he saw the scenes in Auschwitz.
Wow. Yeah, I remember hearing it, trying to get over it, all the horrors that he saw. It was real in his mind, Dennis. It was real in his mind.
Yeah, another one.
The events are usually classified as population transfer or as ethnic cleansing. R.J. Yeah. Rummel has classified these events as democide, and a few scholars go as far as calling it a genocide. Polish sociologist and philosopher Lech Nijakowski objects to the term genocide and calls it inaccurate agitprop. German historian Andreas Hilgruber called the expulsions a national catastrophe and said in 1986 that they were as tragic as the Holocaust. Well, that's a turn up, a German saying that. But historian Gerhard Weinberg, I wonder what ethnicity he is, wrote that the expulsions of the Sudeten Germans was justified, as the Germans themselves had scrapped the Munich Agreement. I'm surprised he didn't say it was justified because they criticised Jews. I mean, that's that's the usual thing that we hear, isn't it? Well, he was an anti-Semite. If you're an anti-Semite, then anything
usually goes. Usually scrapped the Munich Agreement because he invaded Poland to save Germans, that's why.
But just to sort of round all this off, I mean, the amazing thing is that all of this was, the reason for all of this is that they wanted to create ethno-states and they wanted to avoid civil war from having multicultural states. That was the reason for all this ethnic cleansing. That was the reason that was given for it. So to create an ethno-state, they're quite happy to kill lots of white people and move lots of white people around. But the idea that we would have an ethno-state today, well, that's complete anathema to them. That's completely shocking.
Shock horror, yeah.
And somewhere along the line, they decided, actually, no, we don't want ethno-states. We don't want to minimize inter-ethnic conflict. Actually, diversity is a strength. We want diversity. We want multiculturalism. And we want to move lots of non-whites into Europe. So somewhere, you know, 70 years ago, it was the complete opposite, is what everybody was saying.
Well, I'll tell you another thing as well, because Australia, at one I don't know if you can remember, but at one point you can move to Australia for a tenner.
Yeah, I remember. And
what they were asking for was white Europeans, because they didn't have enough down there. So there were nobody else other than white people could actually go to Australia, where a lot from Europe obviously went, you know. So at one point, you know, that wasn't being called racist.
Oh, it's all come fairly quickly. All this diversity is a strength, and it's racist to want to be with your own people. I think it's all really sort of come about in the last 20 years. But obviously,
people.
I mean, nationalists like Oswald Mosley and Colin Jordan and John Tyndall and people like that. You know, they saw that this was coming. And they tried to warn us. But it's only now that we're really, you know, realizing just what's happening and what we're going to have to do to stop it. But this just shows that it is possible to repatriate people. And what they did, after the Nuremberg trials, after they'd done all this, they then declared that it was a genocide to do that in the Nuremberg trials, and said, well, you can't ethnically cleanse anymore. You can't remove populations. After the Allies had moved the most people ever moved in the history of Europe. You know, that was the biggest population transfer that has ever occurred. And straight after doing it, they then, you know, made it illegal to do it again.
Yeah, but I think they're quite capable of doing it if ever they feel like it.
They make it up as they go along, don't they?
Of course.
All right, Dennis, we've reached the end of the podcast. Yep. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, interesting show.
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, that was a surprise me. I really wasn't aware of that they wanted to create ethno-states. That's quite a shocker, that one. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
Radio Aryan.